Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is July 10th, 2017. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2, and we're both at McFlugel.com. The show notes page for our episode is McFlugel.com/47. I'm going to pass it over to Slappy and he's going to talk about our episode.
Thanks, Rollo. Thanks, everyone, again for listening. This is part two of Vivek Raj's explanation of Bitcoin. If you missed the first one, I highly recommend you go back and check it out. Does a great job talking about what Bitcoin is, and he gets a little more in depth in the second half. So enjoy. So earlier you were mentioning some of the altcoins.
Yeah.
Anything you think is promising? Where should we be looking at outside of Bitcoin?
So I'm personally a Bitcoin maximalist. Because, well, there's a few reasons about it. I mean, maybe it's just sort of the crowd that you fall into. And I do think there's also a lot of correlation here. The people that tend, this is just my own personal observation, the people that tend to support Bitcoin Core tend to be Bitcoin maximalists. Whereas this crowd that supports raising the block size, a lot of them are also fans of like things like Ethereum. You've heard of Ethereum.
Yep.
Monero I was talking about earlier is Litecoin. My belief is that Bitcoin is, it has network effects. It's the first cryptocurrency. It has a name recognition. It has the largest market cap, even though that gap has shrunk a lot in recent months. And that it has this like stability to it where it's always, it's the network has always kind of worked. The stewards of the Bitcoin software, Bitcoin Core, have always been very conservative in their management of it. They don't push aggressive features. They don't even want to, you know, they're always very reticent about even increasing the block size because they don't want to put too much data on the blockchain because they know if the blockchain itself grows too fast, you know, it might no longer be decentralized. And when I look at the landscape of these altcoins, I'm not seeing people actually using, you know, people use Bitcoin for stuff. Like I was mentioning, Backpage, darknet markets, there's actually an economy in Bitcoin. Even if most people are holding Bitcoins, there are people actually using it for stuff. But when I look at the altcoins, there's a lot of pump and dumping out there. There's a lot of scams. And in general, for any person new to this space, I would just say stick to Bitcoin. One of the things about Bitcoin is it had a very ethical launch. When Satoshi launched Bitcoin on January 3rd, 2009, he didn't mine any of the Bitcoins secretly himself and only then reveal the software
right
to the general public. To me, that's an unethical way. But when you
does
look
that
at
happen
these,
often?
With very other often.
Yeah. Yes, the pre-mine, right?
Yes, that's a pre-mine, yeah. A pre-mine, another iteration on that is called the Instamine, where this is, so have you heard of Dash?
Yes.
Yes. So Dash, like something like 28% of all Dash were mined on the very first day. Yeah. And guess who that went to?
Yeah.
The founders. Yeah.
Guys who right, made exactly. it, right.
Exactly. Pretty much every altcoin apart from Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Monero were all pre-mined or insta-mined, or in some other way, the tables were tilted in favor of the founders. Of those coins. So Ethereum, for example, was pre-mined, Ethereum, I think, was pre-mined. So a lot of the early Ethereum was given to the Ethereum Foundation and its early founders like Vitalik and Gavin Wood. You've heard of Vitalik Buterin, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's the most prominent founders. Dash was Instamined, and Evan Duffield and a large proportion of the founding team took the early coins. It's so true. It's just the story just repeats itself across virtually every cryptocurrency, apart from Bitcoin. Litecoin was very fairly launched. Monero was fairly launched. Basically, they released the software, and from the get-go, anybody was welcome to mine it. Nobody was given an advantage. But then what happens is with these altcoins is that the people, the founders, they insta-mine them, they pre-mine them, and then now they have an incentive to, once they've given themselves an early set of shares, now what they do is they just start going about hyping it. So, oh my gosh, like Dash is the worst in this regard. They talk about, like, okay, they say, one of the things they claim that their coin is, they call it like private send. it's pure snake oil. Dash is not private in any way, shape, and form. They also claim that they're instant send, where, like, you know, if you send a Dash, it gets to somebody instantly. But the thing about it is, the reason why Dash is instantaneous is because nobody uses it. Right. The minute people Dash actually start seeing significant volume, that claim will no longer be true. Dash is extraordinarily scammy. So what you're seeing is like a community where noobs are buying in. And the thing is, because this stuff is all very technical, you know, I mean, even I'm not a very technical person. You know, I rely on other people to some extent. Some people, you know, they're new to this space, don't even have the years of experience that I have. They don't have the capacity to evaluate these claims. I mean, Ethereum is this concept where you're going to take, you know, they're adding like a very complex programming language, and you can run these what they call like censorship resistant applications. But like I was saying before, blockchain is a very, very bad way to store data. Like it's so inefficient. The reason why you use a blockchain is for censorship resistant. So you look at these projects that are being built on Ethereum, and they have no need for censorship resistance. Like they're just like, they're trying to basically replicate, I don't know, eBay or Facebook or this or that, like on a blockchain. And it's like, if any of them actually receive any modicum of actual user base, the cost of operating it on the Ethereum blockchain will skyrocket. Right now, like for example, you've heard these ICOs.
Explain that.
Okay, initial coin offerings. It's a
IPOs. Yeah.
So pretty much all the ICOs nowadays are basically debuting on the Ethereum blockchain. So people buy Ethereum, and then they give it, and then the ICO happens on a given date and time, where a token which runs on Ethereum network, essentially like you can take like tokens on a blockchain, including Bitcoin, and you can label it in some way. So what these token sales are is some company will come along and say, okay, you give us your Ethereum, and we'll give you our tokens that will be used for our application, which we're still building. And so much money is being raised. There was like there was some company that raised like $150 million for nothing. They haven't even made the product yet. Yeah. And it was like, some of these things are really, really dumb. Like there was one that was going to be like a decentralized token for sharing workspaces. Like, a lot of them you don't need a token for. The token, to me, it's pure scams. They're just doing it to make money off of, then these people, they're not even getting equity. These tokens are not equity in the company. What they are is, they're the tokens to use that company's platform, which they have yet to build, and which has yet, even if they build it, to see any users. And even if they did build it, and it did see users, like I was saying, a blockchain is a bad way to run these apps. The cost of running it on an actual blockchain would lead it to be astronomically expensive. So I predict none of these ICOs will pan out. All these companies will just have made a lot of money. They'll cash it out. All the founders will get rich. And the people who invest their money will lose every dime they put in. I don't think a single one of them will work out.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, though.
I mean, maybe if there's an application where there's a genuine need for censorship resistance, and not only that, but there's a benefit to running it on blockchain versus just putting a server in a foreign country, and then for payments using like Bitcoin, then fine, okay, then maybe that will work out. But I'm very, very skeptical of like all the ICOs. I'm skeptical of Ethereum because a lot of, to me, is a speculation built upon, you know, these ICOs. People are buying Ethereum to get into the ICOs. That's pretty much true of all these blockchain, all these altcoins. Is a lot of people that are new to the space. These altcoins have taken off really over the last 3 to 4, since March mostly, so the past 4 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, up until March, Bitcoin had a dominance of about like 80-something%, or 80-something% of market share was Bitcoin, and since then it's fallen tremendously. So what you're seeing essentially is that you have a lot of heavily pre-mined, instant-mined coins where the founders are controlling a vast majority of the coins, and then they sell their remaining share to people, they tout it, they make these claims that can't really be verified, and then people invest in it, and I think a lot of people are going to lose their money in it. So I would stay away from altcoins in general. Now, like I was saying, there's a few that were fairly launched, like Narrow and Litecoin. Litecoin is essentially identical to Bitcoin with a couple of tweaks here and there. It's like they say they're like silver to Bitcoin's gold. I don't know how necessary that is, but whatever. But Monero is actually a pretty decent project. It's a fairly anonymous chain, and there is some demand for that. And in fact, a lot of the darknet markets accept Monero. Hmm. And from what I understand, some volume is being done with Monero on those darknet markets. So there's some promise there. So I'm not like 100% against altcoins, and they'll always exist. There's almost no barrier to entry to starting an altcoin. Anybody can just take the Bitcoin software, fork it, change a thing here and there, and then launch it. But I mean, I'm a skeptic.
You could really just change the name, right? And leave everything the same exact thing as Bitcoin and launch an altcoin.
That's practically what Litecoin is. There's a few changes here and there.
But yeah, it's interesting. I dabbled in altcoins a little bit. I was trying to do like some trading like 3 or 4 years ago, and it was funny. It really helped me learn about, you know, markets and everything and trading, because I would, you know, I wanted to be a millionaire in something. So like, oh, let me put $2 in here and get a million of these coins, and all of a sudden see the charts go absolutely wild, not realizing that I was the one doing that. So it's kind of funny.
I do think this Bitcoin Civil War has lent some, like, it gives this portrayal of Bitcoin as like being in chaos and disagreement. And so that maybe has lent some credence to it. I think Ethereum has just been heavily marketed with very duplicitous claims. Like they're literally putting an ad saying it's the world computer. And they're saying Ethereum is the internet 3.0. Hmm. It's like, come on, like you don't know that yet. It's
right.
I'm a skeptic, and
even someone like me who knows a little, you know, very little bit about Bitcoin, I guess more than the average person, but compared to people more involved, knows very little. I very easily be led into thinking like, oh wow, look at this, you know, Ethereum thing, they're making all these cool promises.
Yeah,
must be good. Assume that they're, you know,
anybody can make promises, but Bitcoin has a pretty lengthy track record. It's been through a lot of ups and downs, so I think it's just more stable, and it's safe. And I don't think it's worth it to gamble. Maybe it's like some FOMO. Some people felt like, oh, I missed the boat on Bitcoin, so I'm going to invest in the next Bitcoin. That's something there's an element of that there. I don't say the altcoins will always come and go. I mean, and if you look back 3-4 years ago, there's a graveyard of altcoins past. There was an altcoin called Aurora Coin,
yeah,
in like 2014. You remember that one?
I do.
Yeah, that one had hit like $1 billion market cap, and now we're at like 10 million.
Wow.
So, I mean, Ethereum had a little more staying power. I'll give them that. There's BitShares. So BitShares is started by a guy named Dan Larimer. And this guy, what he does is he's kind of a classic scam artist. He starts a project, he touts it, and then he, of course, has it pre-mined. He gets his share. And then after like a year or two, he leaves. He says, he turns the project over to the community. So BitShares was his first one, and that, you know, shot up with several $100 million in market share. Now it's like $12 million market share. Then he started Steemit, right? Steemit was founded on this premise that it's going to be like a social media blockchain,
yep,
where you'll be paid to post.
Yep.
Which, I mean,
yeah,
to me, it's like silly. Like, where's the censorship resistance? You know, I could start a blog tomorrow. I could post on Facebook tomorrow. Like, I'm not really being actively censored, right? I don't need a blockchain for that. It's a silly preposition. Well, guess what Dan Larimer did? He made his money, and then he just recently left. Now he's starting another one, a project called EOS. I don't even know what it's about. I don't really care to learn about it. But to me, it's the latest Dan Larimer scam. I think someday, you know, Vitalik will leave Ethereum. He's made his millions. and he'll turn the product over to the community, and then eventually the energy will dissipate and it'll go on to the next thing. That's what's going to happen. So, I mean, I'm skeptical about altcoins and ICOs. To me, it should be operated, it should have a fair launch, and it should be operated as an open source software project. That's what Bitcoin Core is. Nobody in Bitcoin Core is deliberately paid for it. Some of them are sponsored by companies, but nobody's deliberately paid. There's no Bitcoin Foundation. There used to be one, but there's no Bitcoin Foundation that like sponsors the development team. The Bitcoin Core is a very loose affiliation of developers, and it's very meritocratic. The best ideas tend to float to the top. Monero is the same. It's an open source software project. I think Litecoin is the same. Whereas a lot of these ones, like Zcash, have you heard of Zcash?
Not familiar with that.
Yeah, I've only heard of it.
Okay, so there's literally a Zcash company that I think they have a founder's reward. That's how they made their money off of it. So like a certain percentage of the mining block reward goes to Zcash company, and that's how they make their profits. And they make claims of it. It's one of these coins that's centered on being anonymous. And their claims of anonymity are greatly exaggerated. There may be some element of anonymity in them, but they use a technology called ZK Snarks. Now, from what I understand, ZK Snarks stands for zero knowledge. It's based on zero knowledge proofs. It's a relatively new cryptographic assumption of anonymity. And the thing about that is that being new, it's not a good thing. In the cryptography world, you want something that's older because it's had more time to be tested. Like, if it's brand new, it could be that ZK Snarks could prove to be, broken, poor cryptography, a year from now, somebody could find a hole. Versus other forms of cryptography that are more longer standing, they've proved themselves resilient. And then also Greg Maxwell, who obviously has done a lot of the cryptography work in Bitcoin, he said that only in a recent lecture, it's only 4% of Zcash transactions are actually truly anonymous. So, this is a very technical field, and if you don't have the capacity to value these claims, you're basically investing in something based on the promise of a founder.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's like anything else that's new. People get all excited about it and just know that it's something different, but don't know really the ins and outs of it and can very easily be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Another one I've been hearing a lot about is Ripple. And isn't that kind of like a centralized?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't even consider it a blockchain. The Ripple Corporation has literally been subpoenaed before and blocked transactions. Like, this happened a few years ago. They can block a transaction. So to me, it's not – they just the blockchain is pure marketing to them. Yeah. So it's just blockchain bullshit. Like, and also another thing we hear a lot about is private blockchains. So, J.P. Morgan's testing private blockchains, or this company called R3, which is like trying to develop a consortium of banks together to test blockchain technology. That's nonsense. Like, to me, blockchain, if it doesn't have that proof of work algorithm securing it, there's no point to a blockchain. Like, there's no efficiency gained from a blockchain design. That's just like putting transactions in a block. Like, that's just a folders is innovation here. Like, no, I don't think so. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of BS here. And so that's why I suggest sticking to Bitcoin. It's the time test one. It's proven. There aren't also Bitcoin. There aren't like Bitcoin Core. They're a pretty humble group of people. They don't make like these big claims about what's possible. They're also very reticent about how scalable a blockchain is. And that's why they're trying to push the Lightning network route.
Right.
Because they know it doesn't scale well. They're fully admitting like, hey, it's not very private right now. There's a lot of science to be done here, and it has to be done, slowly and steadily. You can't snap your fingers and develop, the world computer, as Ethereum says. That's something that, that's just out of, you have to be very humble about the science here.
So what do you think to people who haven't bought Bitcoin yet? Did they miss the boat? I know the price was up around $3,000 maybe a month or two ago.
So you asked me if it's a good investment.
Yeah. I mean, is it worth buying now or is it too late? And I know you can't tell the future, but based on what you know.
Yeah. I also, even if I could tell the future, I hate coming off as somebody who's like trying to pump it. Obviously, yeah, I own Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah, so do I. I do too.
I own a significant amount of Bitcoin and I mean, or non-negligible, it's more than like, you know, probably majority of my savings. I don't want to say that I'm pumping it. I would say, okay, like those things I was talking about, if you have a use for, if you like drugs, hey, use Alphabay, okay?
Right.
I may or may not have used it in the past. you know, it exists. So, you know, you can use it for that source. If you have any of those things where Bitcoin solves a problem for you, you know, use Bitcoin. It wouldn't hurt to put a small amount away. You know, Satoshi said a long time ago, you know, if this thing, he said, if this thing catches on, it might be useful just to have a few in case it catches on.
Right.
Because there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoins. It's in the protocol, and I don't think that will ever go away. So, I mean, the price is $2,500 now. I mean, that's a, you know, it's pretty high now. It might be worthwhile just to pick up one or two. I don't know. I mean, like,
have something there. Yeah.
You have something, yeah. Because not more than you, I mean, the obvious advice you always hear is don't invest more than you can afford to lose. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of Bitcoiners have this, we have this very intense belief. We're going to the moon. We believe that Bitcoin will be worth like $1 million someday. And who knows, maybe it will. Maybe it won't. But
every time I've seen, I remember it was like 2 years ago, someone said, by October, Bitcoin's going to be worth, you know, $10,000 a coin or something. It's like, okay, well,
yeah, it takes time. It has to catch on. People have to understand it if they're willing to put money into it. And I think there's, with my limited knowledge, there's tons of room for it to grow and more people coming in once they realize what it is. So, you know, based on supply and demand.
Well, here's some food for thought. Yeah. So last fall, I should actually email this article. There was an article in the New York Times, it's a really long piece, but it's fascinating, about this husband and wife that got divorced. They're like multimillionaires. I think they were several hundred million dollars. They live in like West Palm Beach. And the husband started hiding all his assets from his wife. He was putting his money in New Zealand tax accounts that were sheltered, you know, hidden. And then one by one, like the wife had to go to the lawyers and start like unveiling his web of dummy companies and tax shelters until eventually he had to start basically give it up. And his lawyers turned on him after a point because they started threatening the lawyer's bar license unless they, you know, turned him in or started turning over the funds. And maybe a year or last year you heard about that, the Panama Papers leak.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, all the wealthy people across the globe were hiding their money. So, I mean, this happens where people are trying to hide their assets from governments. And the problem with these tax shelters, you have attorneys, you have accountants, they all take their cut. And they also represent, these people represent counterparty risk, where they're people that can rat you out.
Right.
And I read in the New York Times article, I read there's approximately $20 trillion in money held in offshore assets. If just 5% of that goes into Bitcoin, the price would be about $50,000.
Not bad. Not a bad return.
Yeah, just 5% of that $20 trillion goes into Bitcoin, $50,000. And that's, you know, the global drug market is several hundred billion dollars. So if it, like, you know, if Bitcoin captures the global drug market, which I think it will eventually, because unless it legalizes drugs, in which case Bitcoin will be useless for that purpose, because, you know, then they'll just use traditional value writing transfer systems, then Bitcoin will be worth $10,000. I mean, you go around and running the numbers and look at scenarios here and there, and I mean, I don't know if any of this will come to fruition, but and to me, it's worth a shot, you know.
I think so too.
Especially as if it, I don't know if it has been, it's hard to tell because all these things are underground and you can't really get good data on it in any kind of a black market. But if it starts taking on this use case of being a store of value that the global wealthy begin using to hide their assets from government, instead of having tax shelters, that's tremendous. Last year when India started banning cash,
right,
small denominations, to me, I mean, that's a Bitcoin subsidy. And, you know, every once in a while what happens is I'll be reading these news articles and I'll be thinking to myself, oh man, why didn't I just use Bitcoin? Or, you know, I'll read some news article about, you know, government passes new stringent regulations on this thing. And to me, it's like, oh, well, they just subsidize Bitcoin then, you know. Anywhere the government tries to be very controlling of the way value is transferred, or, you know, they're increasing tax rates and stuff, to me, all this stuff is just Bitcoin subsidies.
Right.
Bitcoin exists, ironically, it's a perfect irony for a libertarian. Bitcoin exists because governments give it value.
Right. Yeah. Right. If they got out of the way, we probably wouldn't really need it.
But in that same vein, Bitcoin to me will over time limit the size of government if it catches on, because it represents a store of value that they can't access.
Right. It's kind of the way out.
Yeah. They can't, I mean, as long, like I've said 100 times, as long as you have your private keys that you control yourself through your hardware wallet, your brain wallet, your paper wallet, although I recommend a hardware wallet, nobody can take that money from you. Not even the government. They could throw you in jail, and, you know, if you get out in 5 years, you know, you come back and you grab your hardware wallet, wherever you stashed it, you know, and, you know, it's a small thing. You can carry $1 billion on there. You know, you can carry $1 billion on a paper wallet. You can memorize the codes and carry $1 billion in your brain. Nobody can take that from you. Remember, have you seen the Shawshank Redemption?
Yes.
Yeah, remember the very end of it where Morgan Freeman sent Andy Dufresne to uncover that the gold hidden near that tree in the middle of nowhere?
Yep.
I mean, what would that be nowadays? That would be like a Bitcoin wallet, hey?
Right.
Yeah. And like some of us jokingly call Bitcoin our prison wallet.
Yeah.
If Breaking Bad occurred today, have you seen Breaking Bad?
Yes.
Okay. Remember, he spoiler alert, he was putting the cash in barrels and burying it out in the desert. Would a drug dealer be doing that nowadays? No, they'd probably be just storing a Bitcoin. I mean, every once in a while, you hear about this, and it's like, yeah, Bitcoin. If Bitcoin existed back then, you know, we wouldn't be using, you know, barrels of cash, and it's just every once in a while, when you'll be thinking about, oh man, should we use Bitcoin? You hear a news story, you know, this guy should use Bitcoin, or, you know, you hear something in the news, oh, Bitcoin subsidy. So, you know, it is what it is. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the beauty of the market is that even though the government's any state at any given country is doing all sorts of terrible things, it just creates other opportunities for people to go around it and create some sort of apparatus to help people. So
it's regulatory arbitrage. And I mean, we've discussed this on Twitter, at least you and I, like, to me, like, it's in the same vein as, like, you know, free trade is regulatory arbitrage in the sense that, you know, instead of, you know, something being manufactured in the United States, it's manufactured in a foreign country where the regulatory and economic conditions are more favorable. I consider open borders or free migration to be regulatory arbitrage, because it lets somebody substitute the regulations of their home country for the new country they move to, which presumably are better, you know,
right,
more free, more
economic
freedom. Regulatory arbitrage is the, instead of working through the political system, which, you know, it's very hard for us to convince many, many people out there to become. I mean, I appreciate all the efforts that you do, and I'll go out there, go ahead and write about why, you know, economic freedom is great. But it's very difficult to change the minds of the vast majority of Americans, because
absolutely,
they're stuck in their ways. But if you can create a system that they can't control, be it Bitcoin or Uber and Airbnb are forms of regulatory arbitrage. You know, they route around taxi and hotel regulations. These systems free us.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about just people not even realizing that, you know, a transition away from the state is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's if they realize what's happening, they're going to be very resistant because people typically don't like change.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just creating like, oh, here's a better way to live your daily life, and they're going to say, oh, okay, yeah, I'll do that, not realizing
it's the beauty of Uber. Every day people all the time use it and don't realize what they're doing.
Yeah, I
think that's how we will eventually get rid of the state, as more and more things like this happen and we realize we just don't need these people.
Yeah. Now, the sad thing is the Uber theoretically could be, I mean, if the government shut down Uber, they would just go and shut it down. If they want to shut down Airbnb, they could. I do not think that Bitcoin can be shut down.
Right.
As long as people hold the Bitcoin, as long as nobody, there isn't some mass sell-off and everybody sells their Bitcoins, literally everybody sells their Bitcoins until the point where nobody wants it. It becomes free again. Bitcoin will always persist.
Right.
I mean, it works just as well at, you know, a value of $1 per Bitcoin as it does at $2,500.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it's the beauty of not having to keep a paper money in your wallet.
Yeah, it's truly a censorship resistant system. I mean, Satoshi really developed a great system, and you know, as we go along, you know, the core team is slowly pushing out improvements to the protocol. Like I was saying, you know, improvements that, you know, make it easier to validate transactions on nodes, improve privacy, and hopefully we'll get that Lightning Network someday that will allow a transaction. In fact, Litecoin already had segregated witness implemented, so they might already have Lightning Network up and running on there. So nice. It's actually, Litecoin makes a very good, you know, if nothing else, Litecoin makes a very good test ground, a test bed for Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Cool. Well, anything else to add on Bitcoin or any of these alt currencies? Any advice? Last advice for newcomers?
Only invest what you can afford to lose. You know, if you're going to buy Bitcoin, one thing that might be beneficial is to buy regularly in small increments instead of all at once. They call it dollar cost averaging, because what it does is it reduces your exposure to volatility.
Yeah, it's very volatile.
Yep.
Yeah, Bitcoin's very volatile. I recommend going through local Bitcoins instead of Coinbase, just because it's more private if you just pay with cash with your local dealer. I've done it many times. It's safe. Just meet at a Starbucks. Pick a dealer who has a well-established reputation. You know, a lot of them are reviewed on that site. And then meet them at a Starbucks, give them cash, and just let them send their Bitcoins to your wallet. Use a hardware wallet, secure your private seed, and just hold. Just hold.
Sounds like a plan. I need to get a hardware wallet.
Yeah.
Yes, so do I.
The Treasury is a very good one. It's about $120, but it's well worth it.
Worth keeping it safe.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I actually have a few of them in case I lose one.
Nice.
But it's a good device.
Well,
I like it.
Well, thank you, Doctor, for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Yeah. If we ever need any more episodes on Bitcoin, if there's any Bitcoin news coming out, or when on August 1st, when this possibly changes, we may ask you to come back on if you're ever available.
I'd love to come on. Yeah. I can come on, you know, a regular basis, once every several months, just to give it up. So much change, you know, because this is a technical field and technology moves fast, and it's like technology meets politics. There's always something happening, and you know, a week is like an attorney in Bitcoin land.
Yeah, so, changing.
Yeah, so you know, there's always something to update on. Yeah, so I'd love to check in regularly and let you guys know what's going on.
Yeah, great. We appreciate
awesome.
It. And thanks for your time
right,
tonight. Yeah,
thank you. Night. All right, you have a night too.
Thanks. Okay, well, that was Vivek Raj talking about Bitcoin and a little bit about the altcoins this episode. So we thank you for listening, and we also send a big thank you out to Vivek for being on our show and talking about this stuff. It was a huge help to, I hope, the audience, but also to Slappy and I. I know I learned a ton.
Same.
About Bitcoin and everything surrounding it, and the pertinent information and news going on currently. I've got to say, it's even inspired me to create my own altcoin called Tractor Coin. So
got it in.
We'll see. I don't know if you noticed last week, but I also got it.
I did. I didn't want to give you the satisfaction.
Very sneakily, I got it. I don't think he even...
No, he was probably thinking, why is this guy thinking about tractors? But yeah, so anyway, I learned a ton, and it's a week after we recorded this. I still haven't got my hardware wallet, but I will be getting one. And August 1st is the date he says there's a potential split. So get on it.
Absolutely. So, I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I thought it was great. I'd love to have him back on again whenever there's more Bitcoin news. I thought he did a great job. If anyone has questions, feel free to send them to us through McFlugel.com or hit up Vivek directly through Twitter.
Right. We have his Twitter account linked on the show notes page, McFlugel.com/47. Another thing, if you guys are listening to these podcasts, you're enjoying it, we'd love if you leave us some feedback on iTunes or Stitcher, and maybe leave a comment. That helps us in the search rankings and make us more widely available to other people. So if you do that small favor for us, we would greatly appreciate it.
Also, if you're out marching around listening and you're not near a computer, you don't want to go to our website, I have his handle here. It's at Vake Raj. That's VakeRaj. You can hit him up directly. He knows everything about Bitcoin.
Yeah, certainly does. All right, so again, I mentioned the show notes page, but find links to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and also subscribe to our email list where we send out a kind of a weekly update of what's going on the website. So with that, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Peace.